You're listening to Charlottesville's Podcasting Network. I'm Dan Gould. Since its inception in 2004, the Rockfish Wildlife Sanctuary has treated almost 3,000 wild animals, representing 60 species of native birds, mammals, reptiles, and amphibians. It has educated local audiences throughout Central Virginia about the habitats and needs of our native wildlife and provided information on what to do when an injured or orphaned animal is found and who to contact for help. In this podcast, wildlife rehabilitators Jesse Cole and Natu Attinger talk about some of the organization's past and future projects. Cole and Attinger spoke at the Wednesday, April 9, 2014 meeting of the Senior Statesmen of Virginia. The meeting was held at the Senior Center in Charlottesville. Following the presentation, questions were taken from the audience. The program was moderated by SSV board member Jim Peterson.
Thank you, John, and thanks to all of you for being here. This is a little bit different because this is our 17th year of the Senior Statesmen, and every program has been about politics or government, education, policy, things like that. And so this is a little departure where we're going to be talking about some of these furry and feathered little critters today. So I hope you have a great time and learn a lot, because I know I have in the last few years when I've been involved with this. I'd say that for me personally, I've been a member of this august body for 16 years and 3 months now, not quite as long as Mike Ludgate, but trying to catch up. And I made my first program back there 16 years ago on mental health issues in the community. And Gene Ecton Davis Smith came up to me after the meeting and said, you know, I think you should be a member of this organization, and it's only $15. And so I said, well, I think I can afford that. So I joined way back then. And of course, as you all know, we stayed with a $15 membership up until 2 years ago, where we cranked it up to $20 after 15 years at one rate. So we'd like to think that we're doing a good bunch of stuff for our community, and that we're doing it at a reasonable rate that anybody can afford to be a part of it. Okay, our two presenters. First, we have Natu Attinger. And Natu was born in France and moved to the United States at age 3. She got her BA in French literature at UVA, had a daughter, and in 1982, she started the elementary Montessori School of Charlottesville, Montessori, for her daughter while she was working as the administration head of the emergency room at UVA Hospital. Eventually, her love of the outdoors won out, and she attended Piedmont Virginia Community College at night to learn about landscaping. She then started her own landscaping company, Hummingbird Landscaping, and while doing this, she also attained her wildlife rehabilitator's license and began to start working with wildlife. She would take in baby animals while she was actually doing her landscaping to make sure they could be fed during the day. Then finally, in 2004, she founded the Rockfish Wildlife Sanctuary, and it's been growing ever since. So that's Natu. And our other speaker is Jesse Cole. She grew up right here in Charlottesville, Virginia, a true native. She attended the Covenant School, after which she continued her education at Christopher Newport University, where she earned a BS in biology with a minor in anthropology. When she graduated in 2008, she returned to Charlottesville, where she met Natu and began her apprenticeship under her guidance to earn her wildlife rehabilitator's license, which took 2 years to acquire. So now I'm going to turn this over to Jesse, and this is a new remote. Hopefully that button will work.
Thank you so much, Jim, and thank you all for being here. We're really excited to come talk to you all today. Spreading the word about Virginia native wildlife is one of our main focuses at Rockfish Sanctuary. So I put together a slide for you all, a slideshow, I'm sorry.
Not working?
I know. One moment. Anyways, I usually focus my PowerPoint presentations on pictures, because when you're dealing with cute baby animals, what's more important than letting people see what they look like so you can kind of get in the feel of being at Rockfish Sanctuary and all the things we do there. Once this little flicker, there we go, now it's working. All right. So we are Rockfish Wildlife Sanctuary, and we're located in Nelson County, Virginia. Our motto here, as you can see, is the crow. We've taken a lot of crow babies and raised them. That's kind of one of our special animals that's closest to our hearts. So that's why we have a crow for our logo. And so a little bit about us. I'll tell you some background. We are a wildlife rehabilitation facility in Central Virginia that provides care for orphaned and injured animals throughout the state. So we'll take in, we get calls from all over Virginia. We got a call last year about some skunks in Front Royal, Virginia, which is about 2.5 hours away. So we will truly help as many animals in Virginia as we can. We are a designated 501c3 nonprofit organization. That means that all of our funding is from private donations, and we also do some grant work. In this picture are two baby possums, and those are my hands, so you can see how tiny they were when they came in. A little bit more about us. We were founded in 2004, as Jim Peterson told you, by Natu Attinger, who's right up here next to me. We're staffed by two licensed rehabilitators, also student interns and trained volunteers. And just to give you a little bit of our size, an idea of our size, in 2013, we took in over 600 animals. I think the final total was 624 animals. So we are definitely helping a lot of Virginia's wildlife. In the bottom left is Laura, one of our interns, and the bottom right is Jennifer. Jennifer is holding a 7.5-pound yellow-bellied slider that came in. It was hit by a car, but after a couple months of rehab, it was able to be released back into the wild, so that was a really exciting story. And I've never seen one that big, so that was really exciting, too. And so a little bit about what we do. Obviously, our main goal is to take care of injured and orphan wildlife while they're being prepared for release back into the wild. But we also have two other goals. First is to inform our fellow citizens of what to do if they do come in contact with orphan or injured animals. We take in thousands of calls a year, talking on the phone, trying to help people in certain situations and what to do in those situations. And then our third goal is to educate the citizens of Central Virginia on the needs of their native wildlife. By doing talks like this, we can get some information out to the public that they might not have known before, so it's always worth it. Every talk is worth sharing your information that you have with the public so that they might learn a little bit more about their wildlife in their own backyards. Oh, I'm sorry. Let me go back real quick. The top left is a baby gray squirrel, so I know you guys see them all around, but they sure are cute babies. And on the top right is a baby flying squirrel, and they're significantly smaller. And a lot of people ask, well, do we really have flying squirrels in Virginia? And we absolutely do. But the reason you don't see them is because they're a nocturnal species, so they're coming out at night. And so what I'd like to do next is give a little bit of information on what daily life is like at Rockfish Sanctuary and what we're actually doing at the facilities. It's one thing to say, oh, yeah, we take in babies and injured animals, we raise them and then release them back into the wild. But to actually get a glimpse into it, I wanted to focus my presentation on some pictures for you all. So, and one of the main things we do for animal care is feeding babies. An example I love to give is that baby birds have to eat every 20 to 30 minutes. And we try to mimic what mom does in the wild, which is she starts at sunup and feeds those babies all day long until sundown when it's time to get a few hours of shut-eye. So we start at about 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning, and then we have a little timer that we carry around with us, and we set it for a half an hour, and when that timer goes off, we run and feed the babies, and we drop what we're doing and go feed the baby birds. So we do that until about 7 o'clock at night, and sometimes when we have some really delicate species in, Natu will even come and do a midnight feeding just to make sure they're getting enough to eat. So at the top left is a picture of a baby mole, and I love this picture because you can see how tiny he is, but his hands are so big compared to the rest of his body. It's a really neat picture. And that's a tiny syringe that we're using to feed him because he's so small. The bottom right is a baby coyote who's actually being bottle fed. That was the first coyote we've ever gotten in, so that was a really neat experience. And then the bottom left is one of my favorite stories. This is a group of 18 baby grackles that came in to us last summer. Somebody was cutting down trees, and we usually try to recommend if you have to cut down trees in your property, try not to do it in the spring or summer because that's when babies are most likely to be in there. But for one reason or another, these trees had to be cut down. So, and I think it was a larger area of land. It wasn't just a couple of trees, an actual acreage had to be cut down. So these big burly woodcutter guys, they were aware of the fact that there were babies in the tree that they had to cut down. So they went to every single tree that they cut down that day and gathered up all these baby grackles that were in their nests, and they brought us a total of 18. So, and then if you can imagine, 18 baby grackles all needing to be fed every 20 to 30 minutes is a full-time job. We had to put one of our volunteers up in the nursery, and all she did all day was feed baby birds. It was quite amazing. And then, so to give you an idea of what we're doing every 20 to 30 minutes, this is what it looks like. We've got a bunch of open, hungry mouths wanting food and screaming for it and letting us know that they're hungry. And the top left are a close-up of those grackles. Top right are a Baltimore Oriole and a barn swallow babies. The bottom left is a cedar waxwing baby, which was really neat. They're one of my favorites. And the bottom right is a baby bluebird. So they all look different. They all have different color mouths. It's actually really neat. Another important aspect of animal care is proper diets. We have to make sure every animal, every species that comes in is getting the nutritional needs that it requires. And because of that, we have to have a lot of different things on hand. At the bottom right, there's a picture of Fox Valley Formula. They're a wonderful company that makes baby formulas for all different types of mammals. So this bottom left picture is a picture of a baby beaver, and he has his own special formula. So we have to make sure we have all these formulas in, because you never know if you're going to get a coyote or a squirrel or a possum. And so we have to make sure we have everything on hand and ready to go. This baby beaver, I'll talk a little bit more about him later, but he was definitely one of my favorites. the guy at the top right is a eastern box turtle, and he's eating a snack of a bunch of different fruits and vegetables. And we also use a high quality dog food, dry dog food, which is mostly protein, so they can get those extra added nutrients. And a lot of different animals seem to like them, and we soak them in water, so it's a little easier for them to eat. And then also with box turtles, we'll go to the garden and we'll dig up some grubs and some worms, because that's one of their favorite foods. So we have to make sure they have what they want to eat. The top picture is a baby hawk, and I apologize for the graphic picture, but he's eating chopped up mouse, which is what they eat in the wild. It's what mom brings them in the nest, so we have to try and mimic that. And he's at a really special point where he's starting to learn to eat on his own and feed himself. So that's one less animal we actually have to feed by hand, which is really nice. The bottom picture is a little raccoon who is digging in his bowl of lots of different things. He gets lots of fresh fruits and vegetables. So we're constantly running to the store to make sure we have everything that they need. He also gets nuts. He gets the high quality dog food. He gets meat. Hard-boiled eggs, really a little bit of everything to make sure he gets his nutrition. And then everybody's least favorite part of animal care, which seems to be the majority of what we do, is cleaning. We have to make sure everything's really clean for these babies that are growing up, because we don't want to introduce them to any harmful diseases. We just have to make sure everything's really sterilized. So the picture on the left is a picture of baby chimney swifts who are living in their makeshift chimney, and that picture is to represent all of the cloths that we have to clean. When babies are up in the nursery, we make nests and we use cloths, and so every day, multiple times a day, we have to change those cloths to make sure they don't get food or poop on them. So we're doing a lot of laundry every day. In the height of the summer, we'll usually do 3 to 4 loads of laundry a day easily. The top picture on the right is a picture of a raccoon playing in his water dish. Raccoons love water. We also take in a lot of waterfowl, like ducks and geese. So water is something we have to keep clean a lot, too. The geese will get these big pools, and we have to make sure we change them multiple times a day to keep it clean. This guy, I just changed his water, and he's already dirtied it up, so they really go through it. And the bottom right is a picture of our tireless volunteers, who we literally could not function without them. They are doing everybody's least favorite chore of mucking the stalls, and that means we have to line the cages with hay because the ducks they poop a lot and it gets everywhere and it gets disgusting. So we have to change it at least every other day during the height of the summer. So that's them working their hardest. And I love this picture, so I had to bring this. These are 7 baby skunks that came in last year, and I think this is a really good good point to make about how important cleanliness is. When you have 7 baby skunks, things get dirty and stinky really fast, so you have to make sure that they're being cared for and being healthy. So we have to take those green mats out every day and scrub them down. We have to change their litter box, and that gets really disgusting. And then all at the risk of being possibly sprayed as they get older. So skunks are always one of my favorites because they're more challenging. And then another important part of what we do is working to educate the public. So talks like these, our annual Wild About Art silent auction, which is the top middle picture that we just had this past March, is one of the ways that we do that on the regular. Some other things that we've done in the past are the top left is the Lovingston Parade, and we got Jim's beautiful hot rod Mustang out and attached our logo to the side of it, and we got these wonderful kids to volunteer their time and dress up like wild animals and ride in the back of it, so that was really fun. The top middle was Wild About Art, and the top right was the Vegetarian Festival in Charlottesville that we did for the first time this year. It was a really great event. We had a lot of people coming up and talk to us all day and shared a lot of information with people, so we'll be doing that again this year at the Vegetarian Festival in Charlottesville. And the bottom left is Drumheller Apple Festival. We did that for the first time as well this past year, and that's in Nelson County. So that was a lot of fun to be able to do an event in the county we are residing in. The bottom two right pictures are my favorite stories. These are some kids that decided they really wanted to get involved and help wildlife, which is always touching when you see these kind of stories. The middle picture is a group of kids from Stony Point Elementary, and they held a lemonade stand over the summer, and they wanted to raise money for Rockfish Wildlife Sanctuary. So after their lemonade stand, their moms drove them out here, and they handed us $125 that they raised from this lemonade stand. So that was really touching. And then the same kind of thing, Lily and Ava Bedotto raised, they saved their allowance for a year and wanted to donate it to Rockfish Wildlife Sanctuary. So they came and gave us $100. So it's just amazing. When kids get involved, it's really a wonderful feeling. And speaking of education and outreach to the public, we recently got a new education animal who's not here with us today. Today we have Quinn the Screech Owl, who is non-releasable due to a break in his wing when he was young that has healed up, but he cannot fly properly, and he can't fly silently, which is what they need to be able to do in the wild to hunt. So essentially, if we released him, he would starve to death. So he has a big home back at the sanctuary, an outdoor enclosure that he lives in, and he comes to events like this with us. The other guy over here, this handsome guy, is Esperanzo. He is our education possum. He cannot be released because he's missing a tail. Possums usually have this really thick, long, snake-like tail, which helps them for balance. And since they climb trees to escape predators, we can't release him without the use of his tail because he wouldn't be able to hold on to branches and things like that that he needs to do. So likewise, he has his own big enclosure back at the sanctuary, and then he comes to events like this with us. So this new guy, Jack is his name, is a juvenile red-tailed hawk, and he came into the Hatteras Island Wildlife Rehabilitation Facility down in the Outer Banks, and he came in missing an eye. But other than that, he's perfectly healthy, and he's, you know, a young boy. And so Lou Browning, the man who runs Hatteras Island Wildlife Rehabilitation, needed a place to place him. So Rockfish got in touch with him and said, we would love to have an education red tail. And so Lou began working with him to be an on-glove bird, which is something we haven't had before, and so we're really excited about it. But he's basically trained to fly to the glove, and then you attach essentially a leash to him, and then he can't go anywhere, and then you can walk around with him. So he and I are starting to work together. We just got him in last weekend, so we're going to work together, and eventually he'll come to events like this as well and walk around on the glove, which will be really neat. And then, so after seeing all this, you know, you might be thinking, well, what's the point? Why care about Rockfish Wildlife Sanctuary? And our answer to that is kind of, well, our urban development that we've been creating is taking away a lot of animals' homes. And because of that, we're seeing a lot more species in need of our help. And so every year we get more and more animals coming into Rockfish Sanctuary that are in need of our help to go back to their natural environment. And then also there's the education aspect. And I know I say education a lot, but it's really important. And so just that alone, I think, is worth it. Getting out there, talking to the public, especially children, informing children of what's in their backyards is really important as well. The top right is a baby gray fox that we got in last year. And it was a really fun story. We were so worried. We got him late in the season, so we were worried that we wouldn't find a buddy for him, because with things like foxes and raccoons, you really want to raise them with a buddy to bond to, because then that kind of takes away the chance that they'll bond to people, which you can't have an animal bond to a person, because then it's non-releasable. But so we were really worried. We were stressed out. We had him for a couple of days. We called all these different places from around the area. Nobody had another gray fox. And so we were really getting to the end of our rope. We were thinking, well, maybe we can buy a kitten and raise them together just so he'll have something to bond to. But then finally we got a call from the Wildlife Center of Virginia, and they had another baby gray fox. So we got to put them together, raise them together, and eventually they were released together. So that was a really fun story. At the bottom is a picture of a baby possum, and they're one of my favorites. They just have the cutest little faces. So that's what Esperanza looked like when he first came to us with no tail. And so a little bit about credentials. So it's illegal in Virginia for a private citizen to rehabilitate wildlife. So that's why we need places like Rockfish Wildlife Sanctuary. As I mentioned before, we are staffed by two licensed rehabilitators, and it takes two years to get that license. You have to essentially apprentice under an already licensed rehabilitator in order to earn your own. We are both state and federal licensed. So not only do you have to go through the state and get that license, but you also have to go through the federal permit office to get for migratory birds. And then we also have to be rabies vaccinated when we're working with these animals, especially things like rabies vector species like raccoons and skunks. We have to make sure to protect ourselves as well. So we have to get our rabies vaccinations, and we have to get a titer every year and make sure it's up to date. And then not only do we have licenses, but our education animals do as well. So for every education animal that comes in, we have to go through the Virginia Department of Game and Inland Fisheries. For the owl and the hawk, we had to go through them. But then for the possum, and the federal permit office as well. So two licenses for each. And then for the possum, we actually also had to go through the USDA, because for mammals, it's a whole separate set of licensing. So we make sure we have everything we need. The top is one of my favorite pictures of our playful little raccoons on a hot day, actually. He's not sticking his tongue out at me. He was just really hot. And then the bottom picture are the two baby beavers that we had in taking bath time. And then, so after I've shared a little bit of information about who we are and what we do, I like to share some of the stories that we've had come into Rockfish Sanctuary, because I think that's what really makes it special, is to be able to talk about individual animals that have come in and hear their stories. So there's so many, but I've picked out a few of my favorites for you. The first one I call the little pink cardinal. So everybody has seen cardinals, and you know that the males are a beautiful red color. Well, this little guy came in. He actually was raised by some people who found him and didn't realize that it's illegal and also not good for the animal to raise them at home yourself. So they called us, they heard about us, and we took him in. Unfortunately, they had been feeding them, and I'm not sure why, but this seems to be a really popular thing to feed baby birds, is breadcrumbs soaked in milk. So, which is completely the wrong diet for baby birds. First of all, birds don't produce milk, so I'm not really sure where that comes from. But anyways, this little pink guy came to us, and because of the poor diet, he was a lot smaller than he should have been, and his feathers are this pink color, which they should have been a brown or kind of like a dark or like a red. Yeah, a red. So he came in, and we were a little worried. Other than that, he was pretty healthy. All of his limbs were okay and everything like that. So we were a little worried about what was going to happen to him. But after a few weeks with us, we really started to see him thrive when he started eating. That's a little mealworm that's next to him, and he really liked the mealworm. So we saw him starting to thrive, and his feathers came in, and they were a beautiful color. They weren't the pink color. They were more of a brown. So he was eventually released, which is a really nice thing to hear because he had a pretty poor prognosis in the beginning, but that was a really fun story. And then the other one we call the UVA skunk. He came into us when he was a baby. This woman who I guess went to UVA was outside of her apartment one day, and she looked down and saw this little skunk in the yard, and she thought, oh, well, I better just leave it alone. Mom's probably here, so I'm just going to not touch it, which is usually a pretty good idea. Unfortunately, though, she came back the next day, and the little skunk was still there, so that means that there's something wrong. Mom is not coming back for whatever reason. So she was brave enough to pick this little guy up with gloves, of course, and put him in a box and bring him to Rockfish Wildlife Sanctuary. Well, when we got him, he was in the worst shape of any animal I've seen come in. I mean, he was completely dehydrated. He hadn't eaten for, looked like, days, and he had this horrible infection on his tail. I don't know if you can see, but this picture on the left, you can kind of see his little tail sticking out from the bottom, and there's a picture of his bandage on there. So we spent 2 hours cleaning out his wounds, giving him fluids, electrolytes, trying to improve his body condition, and we were just kind of worried. Sometimes you get a feeling when an animal comes in that they're just not going to do very well, and it's a really sad thing. So we started getting that kind of feeling, but then sure enough, the next day, he was looking a lot better, and he had improved overnight. So every day, we had to change his bandages on his tail, which when he first came in wasn't a problem because he was in such poor condition that he actually couldn't spray, and he couldn't get his signature scent on us. But as he started feeling better and getting healthier and healthier, changing his bandages on his tail became more of a challenge. And I think Natu and I both got sprayed numerous times, but it was completely worth it. And then at the end, we were able to release him back into the wild. So that was a really great story as well.
One thing I do want to say is one of the ways you avoid getting sprayed by a baby skunk is you tuck the tail underneath, and that way they can't spray you. Mm-hmm. But when the wound is on the tail, it's a whole different ballgame, hence the problems we had.
All right, and then one of my favorite stories I call it the two needy beavers. They're not really needy, but that's just how they are in nature. Beavers are actually really intelligent, and they have a really tight-knit family group. And so as soon as those babies are born, there's aunts and uncles and moms and dads all focusing on raising these babies. So these babies in the wild are never alone. They're incredibly social, and they're always around their family, and they learn everything from their parents and their aunts and uncles. So when they came in, we got one first by himself. And when he came in, we could not leave him alone. So I had to take him home with me at night, and he would sleep in a little crate in my room so that he knew that I was there. With most animals, you wouldn't do this because you don't want them to bond to people. But with beavers, we actually talked to a specialist in Virginia Beach who, one of the main animals she rehabs is beavers, and she wrote a paper on how they do not imprint to people. You can try all you want, but when they get old enough, they know one person, and they don't want anything to do with other people. So this is why, in this special instance, we could kind of cuddle these guys a little bit more than normal.
But also beavers are, they don't really imprint, but if you leave them alone, they can die of loneliness. Mm-hmm. So you actually have to keep them with you all the time. And that lady, what she does is she has a playpen in her kitchen, and so when she's cooking dinner and everything, she's got her little baby beavers there. So, yeah. They're time intensive.
Yes, yeah. So they're very, pretty much I made a makeshift Snuggie and carried them around with me all day when we were at the sanctuary. So these are a couple different pictures of them. The bottom left, he's eating sweet potato, which is really good for them. They have a mixed diet of a lot of fruits and vegetables. We also have to give them tree branches that they can start gnawing on and breaking their teeth in and getting the nutrients from those. And then we finally got a second one, which was really nice because that kind of took a little bit of the pressure off of us because he had another buddy too. So this is them in the middle at the bottom, snuggling together. And one of my favorite pictures is the top right of one of them sleeping. This was before we got the second one. So we try to give them a little buddy. So sometimes we'll put in stuffed animals, something that they can snuggle with. So this picture, he fell asleep with his arm around the little stuffed giraffe. And it was just the cutest thing I've ever seen. And then bath time is a fun thing. Obviously, beavers are used to the water, and they need to have the water. So every day we would have to give them multiple baths. And Jim is going to set this up. This is a video of the beavers bathing, so it's pretty cute. It's just a short little video, but there they swim under the water. And I think it was a couple days after they're born, they venture into the water for the first time. So they're really, I mean, they're just such amazing animals. And there he is, just kind of hanging out, floating around. They would spend all day in there if we let them. Here comes the other one. Boop. So, but anyways, they were just a real joy to have, and they were the first baby beavers that we got to have. We ended up transferring them once we got two of them to the woman in Virginia Beach because it turned out she hadn't had any baby beavers come in that year. So since she was a specialist on beavers, we thought we'd do the responsible thing and pass them along to her. Then we have a story of Baldwin, the too friendly crow. This guy came in from Richmond. We got a call last summer. It was kind of towards the end of the summer, and a gentleman spoke to me on the phone, and he said, I was outside in my garden, and this bird just flew and landed on my shoulder. And I was like, well, that's kind of strange. You don't really hear that happening very often. And so we started talking about it a little bit more, found out it was a crow. He said he had gone to all of his neighbors, and nobody knew where this crow came from. So he and his lovely wife drove all the way down. They were from Richmond, drove all the way down to Rockfish Sanctuary in Nelson County to deliver this guy. And as soon as I got him up in the nursery, I opened the cage, and he hopped right on my shoulder, which with crows, they're so intelligent, is kind of a really bad sign because they can tell good people from bad people, essentially. They can read faces. So he's not supposed to like me if he's never met me before. So that was really worrisome. And we thought for a while we were going to have another education crow. But then we had the idea to try and make him bond with some of the other baby crows that we had. Since he was a young guy, you can tell when crows are young, they still have some pink in their mouths and their eyes are still kind of blue. So that's a way to tell a young crow from an adult crow. So we saw that he was still pretty young, and so we thought maybe we could get him to learn to be a crow by bonding him with this other crow we had at the time. So we put the two together, and sure enough, they became fast friends, and they were inseparable, and he started acting like a crow. He started making crow noises, and the big hit was when we walked in the cage one day and he did not fly and land on our shoulders. It was just the best feeling in the whole world, and then it got progressively even better. He started getting further and further away from us when we would come into the enclosure. So that was a really happy story. So crows stick with their parents for a long time in the wild. They usually will stay with their parents up to 2 years, sometimes learning how to be a crow. So one of the nice advantages we have of being in the middle of nowhere is we can do what's called a soft release with some animals, like crows. And so we release them on site but continue to put out food and water. So that way they can learn to get used to their surroundings but still have that that reliable source of food and water to come back to. So we went ahead and released these two together, and it was the best story. They would come down, and we'd see them every breakfast, and they'd eat their mouse and steal it and fly away. And so then they start come back less and less, and eventually they just went on their merry way and became crows. So it was a really fun story. And then one more. This was, I think, about 2 years ago. We had an adult Cottontail come in, and she was just acting very strange. The person seemed to think she was hit by a car, and then seeing the way she acted in the cage, we started thinking maybe she was blind. So there was a lot of weird things going on one day, and then I remember I came up to change her, because she had to be changed every day, to change her caging, and I looked in there, and there was two baby bunnies in the bottom of the cage. And so she had been pregnant and found a safe spot and gave birth to her babies. And so that was a really fun story too. We got to raise them together and release them together. So that was really neat.
One of the interesting things about the bunny, a mother bunny will not, she will come, feed her babies and leave. She has a smell, her babies don't. And she knows that if she stays with her babies, it can attract predators. Now, she was in a small cage, cage with her babies. So what she did to try and get herself as far away from the babies as she could, there was a nest, and it was under a shelter, and then she would wait outside until it was time to feed them. Then she'd go in and feed them and immediately leave and wait there until it was time to feed them again.
All right. And then, so you hear all these stories about animals that we have at the sanctuary and that we're rehabbing. But then this is a really fun way to show you what happens when it's time for them to go. It's time. We've done what we could for them. They've become an adult. They're ready to survive on their own back in the wild. So this is kind of a series of pictures to show you what's going on when we release something. This is Patty Wallens, one of our wonderful board members. She came to assist with duck releasal, because where we release these guys, you have to walk down about, 150 steps with these giant containers in your hands. So it's no easy task. So sometimes we'll recruit board members to help us out with that. So this is her getting ready to open the cage. And then you get the first little guy who kind of tentatively checks it out and steps out of the cage. He's the brave one. And then all of a sudden they all just rush out. Because they all want to stay together, because there's safety in numbers and they've been raised together. They want to stay. So it's really funny. You see the one come out and then they all just kind of rush out because nobody wants to be left behind. And then there they are swimming away together. And they were actually released in the reservoir, which is a really safe place for them because there's, not a lot of people in this area. So they can learn to get used to their surroundings together and learn to be wild ducks. And then, since it's springtime and we're right in the middle of baby season, I'd like to talk a little bit about what to do if you do walk down the street and find a baby bird or a baby squirrel or something like that. The first thing we always tell people to do is call us first, because a lot of times we can get that baby back with mom, and that's always the best outcome, definitely. The top left are some baby flying squirrels. So sometimes these babies really will need your help. So we really will have to get them to Rockfish Sanctuary. But once we've talked on the phone and we've kind of determined what's going on, then we can go from there. So if you have this baby that you have to now care for until it can get to Rockfish Wildlife Sanctuary, I like to tell people a little bit about what to do. The first thing everybody wants to do is give the baby water, because it's just a natural instinct. It's been on its own. It's probably thirsty. I want to give it water. But that's a big no-no. A lot of babies, especially baby birds, can actually aspirate, which is where they get fluid into their lungs, and that can lead to things like pneumonia or even death. So we always recommend just don't feed it, don't water it, just keep it and wait till we get it, and then we'll give it what it needs. And then also an important thing to do is keep it warm. Babies should feel a little warm in your hand, so if you have a baby in your hand and it's kind of cool to the touch, it needs to be warmed up. So the easiest thing to do is take a old sock and put some rice or some beans in it, throw it in the microwave for a couple seconds, and so that'll hold the warmth really well, and then you can just put it in the box with that baby. If you don't have a sock or rice, a Ziploc baggie or a water bottle with warm water, not hot water, because you can get them too hot too, so you just want to make sure everything's always just warm. That'll do nicely as well. And then always make sure to wear your gloves. If you're dealing with an adult animal who's scared, they're going to bite and scratch and claw. So you want to make sure to wear thick gloves to protect yourself. Also, wearing gloves protects the animal. With things like rabies vector species, we always insist that people wear gloves because they do carry a lot of diseases, not just rabies, but, you know, worms, all kinds of things. So to protect yourself, definitely wear gloves. And also protect the animal because we do have to call the health department if there is any kind of animal involvement with a rabies vector species. Knock on wood, we've been able to talk to people and been pretty lucky so far and haven't had any run-ins. So keep your fingers crossed and keep the gloves on. And then all you have to do is find an old shoebox, an old box, make a little nest kind of thing with some cloths and put the baby in there. And then we recommend setting it in the closet or the bathroom, just somewhere where people aren't going to peek at it and the family dog isn't going to come sniff at the box, just somewhere where it feels safe.
With heat.
Yeah.
And we lose more babies in the transport just because they die of cold so easily.
Heat is number one importance. And then some ways you can help Rockfish Sanctuary. Obviously, money, goods, or services. A lot of goods that we use. We go through paper towels constantly. We have to keep everything clean. Same with Kleenex tissues. We use that for bed liner for baby birds, so we're going through hundreds of those a week. We also need things like puppy pads, Dawn dish soap, things like that we can use all the time. Another way to help is to help transport animals. That means if we get a call from Charlottesville with somebody who has a baby bird, but, oh, I have to work, I can't drive this animal all the way to you guys in Nelson County, somebody we could call who would be willing to pick that animal up and drive them to us. So they are so important because a lot of times during the summer we can't get away for long enough to go pick up this animal because we've got so many others to care for. Some other things are sending in your photos of wildlife you see. We have a Facebook page and a website, and we love to add people's photos and things like that on there. And just advocate for us. Get the word out there about us. A lot of people have not heard of us yet, so the more information that gets out there, the better. And then if anybody has Facebook, like us on Facebook. I'm always putting up pictures throughout the summer of the different babies that come in and some fun stories, so that's a really good way to keep up with us. The bottom left are two baby screech owls, and so Quinn's a screech owl, so you can see they're just kind of little guys. The middle picture is another picture of the beaver, and the top right is a picture of one of our little raccoons playing on his tire swing. They're so smart that you have to provide daily enrichment for things like raccoons who are stuck in this cage for so long. They have to have, you know, things to learn and things to play with, so a tire swing is a really good toy for them. And then the bottom right are some Canada geese goslings, and they're eating their fresh greens. And so now I am going to pass the stage over to Jim Peterson, who's going to share a little bit more about the future of Rockfish Sanctuary.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Jesse. Jesse's coming back, I hope, in just a very few minutes here, but I want to talk a little bit about the organization and where we've been and where we're going. And specifically, when Natu started this at her beautiful custom-built home down in Nelson County a decade ago, obviously this program has taken over her home, and both outside and inside, for these little animals that need to be inside during the winter and all that. So she and the board of directors identified a need early on to look to the future and to get a permanent home for the sanctuary. And today in our audience here, we have a couple of board members. If you'd raise your hands, maybe way in the back, it's Candy. Right? And we have a couple of wonderful volunteers, Brenda here and another volunteer. Who's that?
Chris.
Yep, Chrissy, who I miss. And one thing you need to understand is that we run through $10,000 a year just for food for these animals, and then veterinarian expenses and supplies and so on and so forth. And there's not one penny of any government money in this program, not state, local, federal, none. And, of course, we don't charge fees for any of taking the little animals in for their care. So that means that every single dime that goes to the care of these animals comes out of somebody's pocket, or we have a couple of board members who spend a whole lot of time writing grants everywhere they can think of, and we'll pull in a few thousand dollars a year from the foundations on that. So we've got that ongoing situation of getting money just for operations, but then what about a home? So you can see here, these are some of the cages at the current site, built a number of years ago. And then a few years back, the board got very serious about finding a new location, even though we got no money to do any of this stuff. And so they worked in an arrangement with another group that was temporary. And then after that, the board located a 20-acre site in Nelson County, and we set about then to build a new facility. And this is eventually what the sanctuary will look like. We originally designed it at our dining room table, and that was good until we got to the point where the building inspector, who we'd been working with in Nelson County, said, this is the most complicated kind of building you have. You're having a commercial building, just like Walmart, but you have a small residence in it, because in the basement we have a place for a 24-hour-a-day caretaker, and that particular kind of arrangement brings you into all kinds of stuff. So back when we were ready to roll on this project, let me go first to where is the location. You can see Charlottesville up there toward the top, and then coming down 29, you get to Wheeler's Cove, and the site there at Wheeler's Cove is, I think, about 9 miles from the current site, which is also on the Rockfish, it's over on the Rockfish River Road. These are some directions for once you get down to 29, how you get to the site. It's only a few minutes off of 29. In any event, our engineer that started earliest for us, Jim Taggart, we did about $15,000 worth of engineering work that was required, and the first thing that the board of directors did on their own was to go to the Nelson County Board of Supervisors and get the zoning law changed to allow this kind of a use in the agricultural area. I mean, that's just incredible. And so then, after we thought we were on our way, we found out that we not only couldn't just use our dining room sketches, but we had to have a licensed architect or engineer do everything, meet all the requirements for a commercial building, et cetera, et cetera. And so Bob Yoder, who's a semi-retired architect in Nelson County, we called him up right around Christmas, Thanksgiving actually, and said, can you help us out? And in a 10 days period of time, he had developed the plans. The other two people that have been working with us most closely are Jim Rogers. He's done all the site work, as you'll see in a moment. And then Matt McGarry is the actual builder. So here's just some of the plans that were required to go through all the permitting process. It's not, if you're building a residence, it's really pretty easy, especially in a rural county, to get it all approved. And you literally can do it at your dining room table. But when it comes to a commercial, you have to meet all the requirements of any enormous thing, and also including entrance requirements from your road and your driveway through VDOT, which stopped us from acquiring several different possible properties because of the very stringent requirements that they had. But here's the site. It's 20 acres. You see it's kind of long and narrow. And going through the bottom there is a farm road that transverses the entire property. And at the end, it feeds, I think it's three other residences. And if you come looping down, come right around on that existing gravel road, and then up that very steep incline, you can see the contour. There's a new site for the sanctuary building, and then to the right are where all the cages would be. So this is what the site looked like back in the last summer after we had acquired it, and the very first thing that we did was put the water in. This is before we even had approval for the building, but we knew that if we couldn't get water, we'd be in a big problem. We were very fortunate, hit it right away, and there we had it. Then after that, you're not allowed to disturb the soil. You can't put a shovel in the soil until you get this really incredibly complicated soil disturbance permit through the state. But our site work contractor got in, a chipper there, and he cleared out a lot of the bushes and stuff like that, as long as he didn't dig into the ground. And that comes right up this steep driveway to we're shooting right now from the site of the new building site, which is right here. That's the wellhead right there, and then finally that green thing is our building permit, and we were so excited to get that from Nelson County. Here's the driveway going in, and again, it doesn't appear to be quite as steep as it really is. It's a 16% grade, which is just about as steep as you want to get to have. And this is temporary gravel that was put on last fall to protect it. That's the basement that was excavated at the time. And here's a view from the basement site looking up. And if you see way up in the top there, see if I get this thing working. I can see it from where I'm standing, but that's Sugarloaf Mountain. That's an old fire observation tower that kind of looks over us the whole time on the property. We also put an underground electric service to the property. And here, wonderful, this is in November. The footings are going in. The walls are going up. And here's another thing we lucked out on. We'd had very cold winter in December. And then there were, if you recall, two 65-degree days. And we had already scheduled the concrete to come a week ahead of time, and they hit those 2 days. So we had absolutely perfect weather to do all that. Except it was done at night because the concrete trucks didn't show up. But there it is the next day. There they are getting ready to lay the floor in. The floor is in. And now, also, we also lucked out in that the electric company decided that the power poles were a little too far apart. So they put in one. Of course, this is not all free, but still, they put in a new one, which meant that our underground wiring would come right up the driveway and be very, very convenient. Here we go with the framing. And you'll see on the left, those are actually floor trusses to go over the basement level. Instead of just using a regular old truss or floor joist, because of this commercial building, we had to have those 2 foot high giant trusses. And they're being brought into place with a crane. All of this is happening the last 3 months. The first deck is on. Here comes the roof trusses. They're being craned into place. There is all the trusses in place. And there you see again up to the right, Sugarloaf Mountain overlooking all this stuff. This is one of the snowfalls, you'll recall, we had. Here they're putting in the piers for the porch and deck posts. Here's our second little snowfall we had, and we got more work completed with our retaining walls. And then just the other day, they put the roof on, and that brings us up to the very present. Now, in all of this, so exciting is that way back in April of last year, we applied for a $50,000 grant from the Perry Foundation in order to apply it toward this building, and they approved that, but they said we'd have to raise all the other money that we needed, which is $300,000, before they would give us a dime of their $50,000. And we could do it, had to do it in 1 year, actually less than, just under 1 year. And so as of last Monday, we raised, we tripped over the $300,000 level, all raised by our volunteer board members. There's no big stuff going on. These are 10 people just out there just raising the money. And they did it all. We got the money. And so now we're waiting for the Perry Foundation to give us our last $50,000. The building should all be finished, I would think, in about 2 months. In the meantime, we need to start now building all the new cages. And this is a very small one, but it's an example of the kind of construction that we will have. And in this case, this was built by the students at Nelson County High School. There they are very proudly. But some of these cages are obviously very large, like, you know, from here down to that wall and everything. So that'll be something we'll be starting very, very soon. Going back to Jesse.
Thanks, Jim. So just to kind of wrap up our presentation, this is another release story that I like to share with everybody. This is a swan that came into us a couple, I think it was it 2 years ago? Yeah. 2 years ago, we got a call from Nelson County Animal Control. Somebody had found the swan tangled in a fence, and it had messed up its leg pretty badly. Thankfully, there were no breaks, so that was a lucky instance for that little swan. But he had some pretty bad cuts and bruises and scratches, so we had to keep him for a couple of months just to rehab him, make sure he was healthy and ready to go. He had some infection going on, so we had to clear that up too, give him some antibiotics. And then this is a video of when we got to release him. So this was a really special video shot by our very own Jim Peterson, who could not have planned it if he tried. It was just such a perfect moment. This guy's taken off, and he's showing off how strong and healthy he is, and he's just going to make a loop around, and he's going to come back in for a landing. But This was, I mean, you know, and what's more beautiful and graceful than a swan to show a release of? So it's pretty perfect. So here he comes, circling back. And boom. So it was a really fun story, and we kept an eye on him for the next couple of days. We would go back and just see how he was doing. And he hung out for a couple of days, and then he decided he wanted to go to another pond. So he took off in search of where he really wanted to be. And then I like to end on this quote because it kind of sums up how we feel about nature and wildlife and what we do. It's a quote by John Muir. It says, when we tug at a single thing in nature, we find it attached to the rest of the world. So we're doing these things for these babies that come in, but they're also helping us in so many ways too. And this is a beautiful picture of a sleeping baby skunk. And then another favorite picture, and I'd like to open it up to questions. Natu is going to help answer some questions as well. So if anybody has questions, just raise your hand and we'll, yeah. Oops, he's going to get you a microphone.
Might this be an area the senior center might want to plan a trip, a day trip, or is there...
So the question was about planning a day trip with the senior center. So typically we are not open to the public, okay. And that's for the health and the safety of the animals.
I think we could open for, you know, a small group.
Yeah,
sure.
a small group of people could come and see it, and certainly come see our new facility, which we're all just so excited about, and fingers crossed we're hoping to be in by next summer. We'll see. It depends on the money and the building. Yes.
I was visiting my daughter last week in Maryland, in Chevy Chase, and she said, oh, you're going to be so surprised if we only get to see, I hope you get to see the owl that keeps coming to our yard. It came last year, and it came once this year, but last year it came with its mate. And this year, the owl's here, and we've seen it, but we haven't seen if the mate is coming. And sure enough, while I was there, she called me and says, quick, you've got to come outside. The big owl, big gray owl, is in the tree, and we want you to see it. Well, we watched out there, you know, and did see it. And then she told me on the phone... I saw it twice while I was there. It was there and it flew away and it came back again to the same place. She called me to say that the owl's mate is back with it now and seeing it together. So I thought that was
great.
You know, a fun thing to say.
Wonderful wildlife story, definitely. Anybody else have any questions?
Since I'm on the board, I know to wait for the mic. Where actually do you release your animals? I'm particularly interested in beaver because at Branchlands, up the road here, we have a pond. Mm-hmm. And periodically, we get visited by beaver. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, the beaver will take down the trees. Mm-hmm. But if you band all the trees with wire, which we have, they will come and eat the porches. I know it's treated wood, but they will eat it anyway.
Wow. Wow.
And so when you release upstream,
yeah,
I'm getting, you know, and you're in Nelson County, so you're not right. releasing here, but there are...
No, we have a couple of estates. I have a schnooker. Yeah. We have some estates where they allow us to release. We also... use the reservoir for water birds. We have a couple of people who help us do soft releases for songbirds. And our skunks and raccoons go on the big estate. So, but we will remember your little pond and put a few more beavers in for you.
We already have blue heron, mm-hmm. kingfisher.
Oh, that's cool.
Tons of geese, unfortunately.
Lots of geese.
And the skunks.
Yep. It's that time of year for skunks. They're out and about and looking
for
mates.
Told that they have to kind of lift up before they can get you, but I don't think I'm going to try and find that out.
Yeah, I might not want to get too close.
Well, little skunks will always give you, all skunks, give you a warning, and they'll stamp their feet. If they stamp their feet, which they do before they lift their tail, they give you plenty of warning. It's just that we humans don't know how to read their warning.
Mm-hmm.
So... And another thing about the geese, remember their Canada geese are from the tundra, which is a place with no trees. So they are attracted to lawns. And so if you have a pond which is all lawn around with a couple of trees, you're attracting Canada geese. The more bushes and stuff you plant, the less geese you'll mm-hmm. have. That's why there's so many in golf courses.
Mm-hmm.
So... Just, you know.
Plant some more bushes.
Plant more stuff, and your Canada geese won't stay.
And more homes for wildlife, too.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that's it for the questions. So thank you all so much for having us here today and listening to our talk and sharing information with us. Thank you.
For the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, I'm Dan Gould.